The British School of Brussels, an international learning community for children aged 1 to 18 and currently the only school in Belgium independently ranked as one of the best schools in the world. Hello and welcome to Growth Coaching International's Coaching and Education podcast series. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and in this, the first of two episodes, I'm excited to be joined by Melanie Chambers, Deputy Head Teacher and Whole School Lead for Professional Learning at BSB. Melanie, it's a pleasure to have you join me on the podcast today.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for inviting me, Richard.
You are very, very welcome. Okay, Melanie, for the benefit of our listeners, could you share with us who is Melanie Chambers?
I am originally trained as a French and Spanish teacher. I first taught at a school in Southport in the UK. And in my second year of teaching, quickly took into the role of acting head of Spanish. Moving on from there, I moved to a school in Tenerife, a British school in Tenerife, where I was head of French for a number of years. And I have now, I'm just coming to the end of my 18th year at the British School of Brussels. I've had a number of roles in that time, in those 18 years. I've been an assistant year group leader. I've been a head of year and I've been deputy head for the last 10 years. And during that time, I've had various different roles within the secondary school and now a whole school role in terms of professional learning.
Fantastic. Mel, we have, as you know, a global audience on this podcast, and many, I'm sure, will have heard of BSB in some shape or form. However, for those listeners who know little or nothing of BSB, can you paint a bit of a picture of what life is like? So, for example, at the time of publishing this episode, if I visit your school's website, the first thing that pops up is British International School of the Year 2022. Tell us a bit about BSB.
The British School of Brussels is an all-through school, so we have children from age 1 to 18 on our campus, which gives it a tremendous family feel.
I'm sure.
We have 1,350 students in total from around 70 different nationalities.
Wow.
So a very, very broad international feel to that title of British School of Brussels. About 28% of our students are British, with I think the second largest nationality after British would be American and Belgian. But really, really a very global community of learners. We have 340 staff, again from a range of nationalities, many obviously from the UK trained, yes, teachers. But a good number of Belgian staff and an international flavour as well. We offer a British-based curriculum, but really is a very bespoke curriculum, which we adapt to our European setting and our international students. I feel we are an immensely caring environment. We see a lot of happy children in our school. I'd say relationships are key to everything that we do. I feel we offer a very holistic education that holds the child at the heart of what we do. We are an independent school, so that is a fee-paying school, but we're a non-for-profit school, and I think that's important within that category. We're non-selective in terms of academic ability as well. And yes, you alluded to at the beginning, we have recently won a number of awards, which we're delighted about. You mentioned there the British International School of the Year Award for 2022, which really, I think, allowed us to show how we feel that we've made a difference to the lives of a good number of Ukrainian students who have now joined our school. We have 50 Ukrainian students in our school, and we very quickly changed our admissions policy to be welcoming to our European neighbours. We also recently won the Collective Ed Gold Award for coaching, mentoring and professional learning. And like you say, the Spears Index of one in the 10 best schools in Europe. So yeah, delighted.
Melanie, you highlight the fact that it's all about relationships, and relationships are really good in the school. And regardless of the size of the school and the number of people, it's very much a family atmosphere. And again, as you said already, you know, child-centered and that holistic approach. Mel, before we narrow the focus and get into the area of coaching, I'd love you to share with us the significant shift over recent years that BSB has experienced in the whole area of professional learning.
I think we've gone through quite a significant shift since 2016. Something that we've always done, and I feel we do well as a school, is we invite feedback from our staff. And back in 2016, some significant pieces of feedback came through around the idea of the knowledge and skills that we hold on our campus already. So when thinking about our professional learning, not necessarily always having to look outside for perceived experts to come in and hold, you know, sort of sporadic professional learning days, but actually to look at what we already have. We have a wealth of skill on our campus, as does any school. When you think about teachers as educators, we are in this profession because we love to learn. That is in the title, educator. We love education, yes. Surely. So actually starting from that premise and thinking about, well, what is it that we're all curious about? What is it that we want to know more about? And actually how we can learn together. So I think one of the shifts that we've gone through is that we now have a very staff-led, sustainable model of professional learning that allows for choice, invites feedback. It allows for autonomy. It's a lot of our systems are based on intrinsic motivation. And we are a whole school model. So by whole school, I mean, not only are we learning across different subject settings, across different age groups of primary and secondary, but we are all of our 340 staff. So regardless of role or function, be that in an operational role or a teaching and learning role, we come together as one community to learn. And we really seek out those areas of interest across the school and that inquiry, and build on our own intrinsic motivation to learn.
Yeah, fantastic. Tell me a bit about the learning symposium.
So when we came together initially in 2016 to look at how we might rethink professional learning at BSB, one of the ways in which we helped to bring about that change, that cultural shift, was we appointed at that time 14 what we call professional learning partners in our school. And these were people who came into role without, you know, it doesn't come with a financial gain, but actually what we did do is try to offer some time. So where possible, we gave, you know, perhaps up to two periods a week to work together as a professional learning partner. And these members of staff really were agents of change to bring about this new way of working as a school. And one of the things that they initially set about working was rethinking about our professional learning days, how differently they might look. And they were so keen that they were going to be very much based on staff and student voice. And they made a very bold decision back in 2017 to make those professional learning days completely staff-led. And it was a bit of a leap of faith at the time, because as I said, we'd always had people coming in and delivering these days. So it was, ooh, what's going to happen? Let's just see what happens in this space. Well, we couldn't believe it. 50 members of staff stepped forward and said, yep, I'll lead a session across those 2 days. So we were delighted to see how that happened in 2017. So being ambitious, the following year, 2018, we took it a step further and we said, right, let's have a real celebration of learning. Let's have what we call a symposium. And we opened the walls of our schools, invited other like-minded, you know, some of them educators, but some of them from much wider roles as well and professions, to join us really in that spirit of learning together and inspiring success and thinking about what we could celebrate in our learning together. So that was our first symposium back in 2018. And we decided at that point, right, we'll think about having a symposium every 2 years. But then obviously it got to 2020 and yes. There were a few more restrictions on those kind of events.
There were.
We, during that whole time of COVID, we still met as a community online. We still had a lot of staff-led learning. Naturally, some of that was very much about getting used to new IT systems, yes, as we all had yes. to very quickly adapt to new ways of working almost overnight. But we still maintain that staff-led learning in terms of perhaps, you know, coming onto calls at 4 o'clock for people to share tips and tricks. So once we were fully back on campus, we started again thinking about, okay, when can we do our next professional learning symposium? And we just held our last symposium in February 2023 around active, ethical and purposeful engagement with the world around us. And very similar to back in 2018, it was a combination of our own staff and student-led sessions, but also with critical friends that we'd invited, who many of them were with us back in 2018, and they are sustainable connections that we've held for a good long period of time, but also some new networks and friends came into that space too.
Fantastic. Just listening to you explain that, well, the first thing comes to mind is that back in 2016, a very, very brave step. Because you start off by talking about listening to the feedback from staff, and then very quickly looking at the team of people that you have around you and realizing the knowledge and skills that lie, as you say, within the walls of your own building before you need to look anywhere else. And I love the idea of these professional learning partners coming from within the staff. And as you say, you know, being overwhelmed by staff offering to take part in staff development days. And again, you know, note important things, like a key word you mentioned there is sustainable. And if you're running a school, leading a school, and something that's sustainable, there's going to be a big appeal. That's something that you can hold on to. And as you said, they're having the first symposium 2018, coming back again then just this year, 2023, people who've returned from that first one. So it is sustainable. And again, you know, a good model for, I suppose, for other schools to see and emulate in some shape or form. As BSB evolved through these changes, and there were significant changes, what would you say were the barriers? What were the roadblocks along the way, and how did you address them?
I think what I'm talking about there at the beginning of that journey is a cultural shift. And when you're thinking about a cultural shift, you're thinking about hearts and minds very much as well, and how we work together as a community, and really how we bring trust into that space. So I think when you're perhaps rethinking a culture, some of the barriers are going to be where people are still perhaps used to the prior ways of working. And some of those barriers in many places, in many organisations, can sometimes be self-imposed. So perhaps one of the first questions to ask is, well, which are real barriers? Because, yeah, there will always be real barriers, but which are self-imposed barriers that actually we could quickly lift? And actually, by allowing for some quick wins and lifting some quite easy barriers, that is one way that you're going to quickly build trust within an organization. And I think another area where you're thinking about building that trust is to allow for some risk taking, because you might have worked perhaps in an organization before where it was a little bit more slightly controlled. And actually, if you're moving away from perhaps those ideas of control to much more open thinking that allows for innovation and allows for change, then you're going to need to lift barriers and allow some risk taking. And within that, I mean, obviously, risk taking within that still fits within the whole school development plan.
Yes.
But with that comes the recognition that there may be setbacks when you take risks, but it's how you respond to those setbacks, and that you see them as learning opportunities, and that you're together in that process. Another barrier will always be time. Schools are immensely, yes, immensely busy places. But I think what's really important is to think about when you look at your staff, when you think about the staff in your school, what excites them? What are their passions? What are they curious to know more about? Because we know that we will always find time for the things that we enjoy and the things that we're passionate about. So perhaps starting with that premise of, well, what is it that we know we do well and that we want to know more about and that we're passionate to come into this space? And then time is less of a barrier because we will make time. But there are other ways that you can think about time. You know, how many different ways can we free staff up other than perhaps the more traditional, just taking people off timetable? Can we rethink how we do meetings? What can meetings actually just be professional learning sessions? Can we, you know, double up classes or, you know, how many different ways can we think of creating time other than just awarding people hours on a timetable? So being creative in that space. And I think another way is to not see it as a barrier when you bring about a cultural change, actually to see what already aligns. So I imagine that most schools, when they look at what their mission is for their school, their mission statement will already hold a key number of values in it that align themselves very well with a culture of professional learning and a culture of coaching. And it's a really good starting point, so you don't feel like you're bringing in something new. You're working with something that already exists.
Yeah. And on that point of coaching links lovely into the next question, Melanie, can you tell us about what or who originally inspired you to get into coaching? And then maybe give us a bit of an insight into what coaching currently looks like at BSB.
I think our coaching started with a recognition from all of our staff that the learning that we needed to have collaboratively as a school relied on dialogue. It relied on really good listening skills. It relied on good questioning. It relied on that ability to offer and receive feedback. And to enter into dialogue, you need a certain amount of skill. And our own staff recognised that, and they started to seek out ways in which they could enrich their professional learning conversations. And it was at that moment where people started inquiring more into coaching, making connections with Growth Coaching International, making connections with Collective Ed, a number of people in this space who helped add some skill and give some tools to people who were already trying to enter into that space but just needed a little bit more support to have more intentionality to the conversations they were having.
Yeah, I think that's key. What you say is dialogue. So as the school reflected, it was over a number of years and made this significant cultural shift, realising the importance of dialogue and then in some ways realising the need to upskill individuals to make the most of the dialogue, because that was going to be key to you folks moving anything forward, regardless of what area of professional learning you were focusing on. So again, this whole area of moving into coaching has been a huge benefit for BSB. And yes, looking beyond, you know, the school in some cases to maybe experts in different fields. Thinking of our listeners again, Mel, I'd imagine that, well, many of them are working in contexts that are, well, very different from that of BSB. So I'm thinking of significant financial challenges, maybe staffing shortage, just to name a few. What aspects of your coaching culture could be easily transferable or applicable to other school settings?
I think it comes back to a little bit what I was talking about before, about thinking about which of the barriers are perhaps self-imposed barriers and which are barriers that actually are real formidable ones, and actually thinking about that. So thinking about how many different ways could we do things that, you know, things that we need to do, but how many different ways could they be done? So one example is that in our school, our appraisal system, we worked together as a group of staff to rethink what that could look like. And we now have something called autonomous professional learning, which really allows staff to be in that driving seat of making the decision about what their own professional learning focus is going to be. And so working in that way, we've still got that system of thinking about people's own professional learning, but it's very, very staff led. And to make that as intentional as possible, those staff do well by working alongside a coach. So when they're trying to draw out what their goal is for their professional learning, that opportunity to be able to connect with a colleague. So it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody who wears the hat of coach or with the name badge coach, but as the culture develops across the school, this could be the person in the room next to them, the person who sits at the desk next to them, the person who they share a table with at lunchtime to have their sandwich, who can then help them into that space to think about what their goal is in terms of professional learning. So perhaps thinking about what are the informal ways of creating that as well as the formal ways. So it's that mixture of formal and informal. I think starting with who already is in that space. So who are the champions already amongst your staff? So who already shows the skill or the will to work in these ways? I think as leaders to role model those ways of working as well. So there's some very subtle ways that can come into place, as well as perhaps the more formalized routes.
I think that's particularly useful, Melanie, because you know each of those things that you suggest, it's all around mindset. It's all around your thinking and how you approach the problem. So that first question, you know, which of our barriers that we've highlighted are self-imposed? And being able then to, I suppose, filter down through those and see which ones that you can address more easily than others. And then, you know, you mentioned the word autonomy quite a bit today, which I think is a really important aspect of it all. And for other schools listening in and for leaders or for teachers listening in, you know, nobody's going to want to shy away from autonomy. I mean, the opportunity to have input into how a school moves forward. And I suppose that links back to the whole idea at the start of our conversation where the school's taking risks, being prepared to take risks. And again, it's about making mistakes. But when you make mistakes, as you said yourself, Melanie, those are learning opportunities. And that's how you respond to those mistakes that are absolutely key. And again, I've written one word down here, Melanie, and that's the area of time again. So regardless of your school or of your circumstances, if you have individuals, you talked about champions there, who are passionate enough about the subject, in this particular case, coaching, it's amazing how we can find the time, and even on our, you know, for ourselves to make sacrifices in various other things we're doing, we can find little snippets of extra time to move things forward, like coaching. So that's really, really helpful to the folks who are listening. Melanie, thank you so much for sharing with us something of the inspiring work that goes on at BSB, right from the broadest aspects of professional learning through to the specific role coaching plays in the life of the school. For our listeners, I'm excited about the fact that this is just the first of a two-part series. In the next episode, Melanie and I will be joined in conversation with another member of our team, and I trust you will all join us as we take an even deeper dive into the world of coaching at the British School of Brussels.